on page Kuf Mem Dalad, which says Perik Sheni Mahin Midais. I really apologize that we're not going to even come close to finishing this, but at least we'll come close to starting it to get to begin with the definition of what does it mean when we speak about Midas. Everybody is worried about Midas. Anytime a person looks into a school nowadays or a shidduch, everything is Midas, Midas. We want our children to have good Midas, or we want to have good Midas. What are Midas? What exactly are they? So our way of understanding it is to, you know, to be nice and to have good characteristics, nice personality, chulu. The truth is, it's a very, very, very deep sugya. It's one of the deepest subjects in all of Torah, because our midas, of course, are a reflection of the midas kivyachal that Hashem has revealed in the world. If a person wants to have a little bit of an understanding of that, to learn the Talmud Dvaira, I'm sure some of you have heard of, you've seen, especially during Elul and Tishrei, to learn the Talmud Dvaira. It's been translated into English. And the midas of Hashem, the midas of Hashem, what that means, the spheres, the 13 midas and so on, that's who we are, that's how we're made, that's what we're made of. We have to understand who we are and how to change our lives and how to make our lives good and meaningful. We have to enter into the sugya of midas, to understand what the midas are. This is what this entire Marocha, this entire Maimer from Avolbi is about. So let's just begin with a definition. So Perik Sheini, where it says Mahein Midas. Mahein Midas. Harabam Kari L'Midas Deis. It's very interesting. The Rambam does not have in Mishnah Torah, in his Sefer, the Rambam does not have a section on Hilchos Midas, on Midas. The section at the beginning of the Rambam, not at the very beginning, but almost at the beginning of the Rambam, where he teaches us the Midas, and he talks about Midas, is not called the Halachas of Midas. It's called Hilchos Deis. Hilchos Deis. That's remarkable. And that says a lot, why the Rambam chose to use that word to define Midas as Deis. And the Mashgiach explains, HaRambam Kerle Midas Deis. Now, what's a deya? A deya means a thought, an idea, an opinion, right? That's what a deya is. An idea. An idea. Deya, he b'chinas echlus. We understand that a deya, an idea, is connected to the intellect. Now that's very, very important to know. Why? So he explains. We naturally think of our midas as certain fixtures in our personality. Like other kaiches, if you have a person, let's say, that's strong. He's a strong person. And that's something which is a part of who he is from the time that he was a child. He was strong. And grows up in such a way with a certain merits, a certain kayach, say that. So we usually look at our midas, and this is what I was talking about on Shabbos. Some of you here, it's Pesach Shabbos. We look at midas as fixtures in our personalities of who we are. When it's a nice mida, so then that's very good. When it's a mida that's not so good, so that's what I was talking about on Shabbos, about you pressed the wrong button, and because you pressed a certain button in me, you got a certain response, because don't you know that this is a midah that I have? Because I have a midah, it's called kas, and it's a part of my personality. It's woven into the fabric of who I am, and it's something which is unchangeable and barely adjustable, like volume, you know. Maybe you can lower the volume a little bit, but as far as be'etzem, really any major change is concerned, we don't look at our midas in such a way, and therefore there's a natural tendency on the part of most people to work hardest on becoming great in the midas that they're naturally good at to begin with. So it's understandable that If you're artistic, then you would work with something that would bring out your kaiches that are artistic. And if you're musical, then you would be inclined towards something which is musical. But the last thing you would want to work on is that which you find that you're naturally totally not inclined towards. That would be the last project that you'd want to work on, because you feel that I don't have such a kaiach. So if somebody would want you to lead the choir, you know, what do they call them, the girls, the, you know, the cantatas or whatever they have, and you said, it's not my kaiach, you know, but if you would ask me to run the color war, you know, if it, a child in camp, that I could be good at, that I have a certain kaiach like that. So naturally, we shy away from those things that we feel that we're not good at. Makes sense. And we're inclined to become more involved in those things that we are very good at. But we feel that we have a kaiach. And this is something from the time that we're children, it's very natural to us. Makes sense. That I have kaiches, I know what my kaiches are, and I know there are certain things that are not my kaiches, and I prefer to stay away from those things. This is a terrible, terrible mistake, as far as a Jew is concerned. Really, it's fakir. I'm not going to go, we don't have time to really get into the depths of it right now, but Tzaddik says, and we spoke about this years ago, and Sikas at Tzaddik, all the Tzaddikim talk about this, the Vilna Gaon, all the Tzaddikim, how usually the simon of what you were created for and what you could be greatest at is doubtly the thing which you have to struggle the hardest to accomplish and achieve. Now, we're not talking about selling insurance if that's something you really can't stand, or painting, you know, if that's something you can't. We're not talking about the superficial things in life. We're talking about the deeper things of life, that it's where you would naturally stay away from that because you see it as a weakness. That's usually a simon of something which HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to become very great in, but you're afraid of the challenge of that particular area of life. We'll talk much more about that. But what's telling in the Rambam is that he calls midas deis. So what does that mean? So he says, we usually look at our midas as fixtures in our personalities, like other kaiches that we have. Seeing and hearing, those are certain kaiches that, God's help, this person has a little better, Khalil a little worse, but those are kaiches that we have to see and to hear and to speak. And we think also the same way that those are fixtures inside of us, and Hashem implanted those kairos in us, so too He implanted in each and every one of us certain midas, and that's how we think of our midas. Now there is some truth to that. There is some truth. We're going to talk about that. Of course there is some truth. And each and every one of us has a certain recipe, and we're made up of in a certain way, and there's no question that there are certain kaiches in midas that you and I, each one has, everybody's different, certain kaiches and certain netiyas that distinguish one person from the other. But the Rambam calls it hilchas deis. So he says, hargoshes rav v'soy v'vay. There are other kaiches that we have that Hashem implanted within us that we naturally, that we, if we don't eat, we feel hungry. We spoke about that because Hashem wants us to take care of ourselves and so on. But there's a very important point here. Im hamidas hen kaiches, if it's true that midas are just kaiches, like hearing and seeing, hunger and so on, if midas are just kaiches, if that just kaiches, then iev shalekar halachlefeisan, then I can't possibly uproot or change. I can't uproot or change something. In other words, I'm basically the prisoner of certain kaiches. There are things that we prefer not to see and not to hear. But if, thank God, our eyes are working and our ears are working, that's not a matter of choice. You can close your eyes and you can try to shut your ears. If you're a human being and you're able to know what hunger feels like, that's a certain kaiach that you have. If midas are identical with kaiches, that would mean that they can't be changed or they can't really be adjusted. Achim heimus kolois. If, however, midas are also a matter of thought, ideas, opinions, views, hashkafas, then yesh v'yesh l'shanaisim. A person is certainly the balabas over his thoughts. And a person can certainly, all of us, even though it's hard, all of us have changed over the years. Many things that we've thought about, we've changed over the years, consciously or subconsciously. But when it comes to thoughts, certainly there are many changes. A person is about love over his way of thinking. I told you once years ago, I think, that there was a ma'aseh with there was a chassid that came to the Kotzke, and he complained that he has all kinds of foreign thoughts. This is what it's called in the Svarim, machshava zaros, alien thoughts coming to his head during davening and during the day, and he's very upset about. And he asked the Rebbe for an etzah, that he has these foreign thoughts, these alien thoughts that are plaguing him. What should he do? So the Kotzke said, I don't know what to do for you. You know, the Eibush is all help. Anyway, by the time he got home, when he came back to his house, there were Hasidim his wife was standing outside screaming, and there were Hasidim that were taking outside all of his furniture. They were taking out all of his belongings from the house. And he came running over to the Hasidim, and he said, "What are you doing?" So they said, "The Rebbe told us to take everything out." So he said, "What do you mean? It's my house. So they said, "It doesn't make a difference. The Rebbe told us, so we're taking everything out from your house." So now he went running back to the Kotzke, and he said, "Rebbe, I came home, and the Chassim told me that you said to take everything out from my house." So the Kotzke said, "I thought you said that you're not the balabas, that you have alien thoughts, that your thoughts don't belong to you, that you're not in control of your life. So, if your thoughts don't belong to you, then why do you think your couch and your bed belong to you? They're your thoughts, and you're in control of your thoughts. You feel empowered to be in control of your property, of your belongings, and that Hashem gave you the rishus to be in charge of your couch, of your bed, of your table and chairs. The Baruch Shem put you in charge of your seichel. Those thoughts are not alien thoughts. They're your thoughts, and take control of them. You're in charge of your thoughts." Although it's true, the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh said that there are thoughts that are thrown into the head, that the Baruch Shem does such things, that we have nisyayin, it's not for now. But if a person has a thought, a person's a balabos over a thought. We have control over our thoughts. The whole chassidus of Chabad is the koyach, is to show, to reveal the depths of a person's control, the control that the mind has over the emotions. That's all of Chabad chassidus is built on that yesod of the mind, of the mayach shaylet al halev, that the mind can control a person's feelings and emotions and thoughts. One's in charge. Now, if midas are called by the Rambam deis, thoughts, it means that there is a quality of intellect that's connected to them. That's very encouraging. Because if there's something intellectual about midas, it means that with the balabatim, it means that we have some control. Now, there, as I said, not entirely, but certainly much more than we think. Means that we could make changes in our midas. We're not doomed to certain midas that we feel that we have, that we came into the world with certain acting upon or acting out certain midas that we've come to accept. Well, this is not my strength, or I'm bad at this, or I'm not a good-natured person, or I'm an angry person. If they're muskalis, if midas are deis, it means a deya, a person's a baldeya. A person has the ability to adjust his way of thinking, to control and to adjust his way of thinking. So that's very encouraging. So he says, "Kefi hanira hamidus en gam deyas v'gam kreches." Of course, it's not purely a matter of the intellect. And that's what the Maamar is going to be about, the different ingredients and the makeup of each person and how to look at ourselves and to measure this. But midas, he says, are truthfully a combination of deis and kaiches. A midah is built of these two ingredients. It's made of deya, of a certain outlook, a way of thinking that certainly can be adjusted and changed. And that's all Hashem wants of us, is to do the best we can. Each person according to his own abilities to adjust those midas that they should be according to his will. And Hashem Yisbarach does not expect you or I to be the Chavetz Chaim. If that's not within the realm of our kaiches, that's not what we have to be, Chavetz Chaims. We have to be the people that we could be with the kaiches and the deis that we have. Kfianer hamidas hengam deis vegam kaiches. Amida is a remarkable combination of deis and kaiches, of thoughts and kaiches. When we look deeply into Amidas, that itself is not often done, because we accept certain things. But when we look deeply into our Amidas, each and every one of us will discover that we have certain muskalos rishonim. I guess the best way to translate muskalos rishonim would be there's a certain intuitive, almost reflex reaction that a person has, an immediate initial way of responding to certain things in life. That's what's talking about on Shabbos with a button that's pressed. There's an intuitive type of thinking. A muskal rishon means your first reaction to hearing something. You can look into that if you stop and think. Usually we get caught up in it, we don't stop and think about it, but a person can reflect upon his muskalos rishonis. How do I react immediately when I hear certain type of things or I see certain type of things? What's my first muskal? My muskal rishon. Not after I calm down or work it through, but how do I first respond? What's my intuitive knee-jerk response to something? That's called a muskal rishon. So the tzaddik says over here that k'sha'adam esbanim b'midah sayna nimtzer shayim muskalos rishayna. When we look at our midas, we will discover, and this is pretty pathetic because we're not youngsters anymore, we'll discover that most of our midas are really muskalos rishaynas. They're just knee-jerk reactions. They're just intuitive reflex responses to certain things that from the time that we're in the world we have accepted a certain way of responding or of reacting to certain things, to everything. For instance, muskal rishon hu lakasa, the first muskal of the temperamental person, right? You're in that category. If you've already been placed either by yourself or by your parents or by your teachers or by your friends or by some therapist or whatever it is. But there are people that have categories and classifications for people. There are books that are written that classify individuals. I know that there are some written that are by very, very fine chashuv of from people, where you can look at yourself as being a type A or a type B, right? There are books like that. There are courses like that. And so pretty much you've come to tight yourself up or be tightened up by others as fitting into a certain type. And this person has the misfortune of being a kaasan. A kaasan, a temperamental person, a kaisan. He's temperamental. So the muskal rishon of a kaasan, what's the muskal rishon? Now remember, this is already 50 years he's a kaasan. 50 years. So the muskal rishon hu lakaasan, ki olav lehisragis b'chemesh fuchar, kasha oivim al ritzaynai, om aliv maisai. The knee-jerk first response, the reflex of a kaasan, is to get angry and to pour out his rage, depending upon how you disappointed him, upset him, depending upon what happened. But it's his first reaction, to pour out his anger, if you go against what he wanted, if you over al ritzaynay, or maliv maisay, or if you embarrass or humiliate him, this person, the kaasan, he has a set way of reacting. It's pretty much the same since he's a child, except it takes on different levushim as he grows up and becomes more sophisticated. So he might not have a tantrum and throw himself on the floor, kicking and screaming, but he pretty much will do that in a more sophisticated way. And if you close your eyes, you can imagine him as a 5-year-old or a 3-year-old on the floor in the toy store kicking and screaming. It's just now that he's doing it in a different way. But it's basically kicking and screaming. I was just on the phone with a chashava, a chashev newlywed today, who's going through a very, very difficult first year. And the therapist said that the only way that you could make this marriage work is that when your husband acts that way, you have to accept that he's a five-year-old child. And to look at him like the same way that you would look at a five-year-old child, and to treat him and to deal with him as a five-year-old child. Or else you're not going to be able to survive this. You're not going to be able to get along with him, because that's basically what he's up to in this area. When he loses it, he becomes a five-year-old child. So we were talking about that. It's very hard for us. I could do that every now and then. You know, I try, but it's very hard, because I find that, you know, he's having these kind of tantrums pretty much every day or two. And I again, not going on the floor and kicking, but being nasty and I don't have to go into it. It's bad. And so what the therapist is saying is that this is who the person is, and if you want to stay married to him, so you'll have to deal with that and understand that if you're going to try to force him to be an adult when he's 5 years old, then you're going to clash and you're not going to be able to stay married. And so the therapist is helping her with certain exercises of how to deal with a five-year-old in the lavush of he happens to be around 40, they're married later, in the lavush of a 40-year-old. And a 40-year-old, I mean, that's a lot of years of tantrums. That's a long history of tantrums. So it's a muscularization. I mean, this is who I am, and this is how I react. If you cross me, if you press the wrong button, or if you embarrass me, this is what could be expected. And as I said on Shabbos, it's your fault if you did that, because you should know better. Since you know me, you should know better not to set that off in me. Muskul rishon hu l'bal gaiva. Let's take another problem. Amida v'bal gaiva. A person whose ego has grown very large. A person who's a balgaiva, the muskarishna of a balgaiva, his first reaction, the knee-jerk response of a balgaiva, ki magia like kovet utehila, that he deserves kovet. He deserves kovet. Again, that changes over the years of what kovet means. And how does he define covet, and how does he seek covet? But the muskel rishon is that he wants recognition, and he wants to be appreciated and praised. Usually in a very inflated way. Usually in an inflated way, which is what the Baal Gaiva's problem is, and that's a muskel rishon. That's how he will react initially to something. And that, it's very hard to explain why else would a person, let's say, who's davening someplace for 25 years, why will he never step foot into the place again because he felt that he was slighted by Mafta Yonah or something like that, right? And even though he's sworn that this, he loves the Rav, he loves the Shul, he loves his friends, and that moment when they said instead of calling up his name, he heard someone else's name from Mafta Yonah, or whatever it was that he was expecting, he's prepared to ruin his life and ruin other lives and so on. It's a muskel rishon. And this, again, takes many shapes and forms. And it's been since the time that he was a kid that he wasn't, you know, that he wasn't chosen within the first three people in the baseball game or whatever it might be. It takes on different levushim over the years. But it's a muskel rishon that he's accepted over the years. He's a balgaiv. So what about a lazy person? That's also another midah on a list of favorites. Atzlonis, laziness. The muskel rishon of an otzel, the first muskel of an otzel, which he's convinced himself or become convinced of over the years, ki olav lachdol mikol ma'amatz l'maisei tov, that there's no point in investing his energy and putting in an effort into something that is worthwhile. This is not. He has a million explanations. It's not kedai. I tried this before. It doesn't work out. Like Shlomel says, I would do it, but there's a lion in the street. The Atzlan, like Shlomel says, the Atzlan always has, the lazy person always has a reason why he's not going to try something, and it's not kedai, and he knows better than you, and he'll, no matter what you'll say, even though you'll tell him, I was working, I did this inyan 1,000 times, and that person has never tried it, he'll tell you why it can't work. And you'll say to him, I've done it 1,000 times, and it works. He'll say, no, it works for you, but it can't possibly work for me. And that's his muskularization. The second he hears of something that's important or that's big that needs to be done, the muskularization is, ich kann nicht. It's not for me. I can't. If I would try, I would fail, and so on and so forth. Now, that's the muskularization. That's something that's in the brain. That's in the brain. That's how he thinks right away. These examples, and of course, many, many other examples. Hamuskel shel hamida nezer. Now, first there's that muskel, there's that initial way of thinking. There's that immediate intellectual response that is formulated in the brain. It happens instantaneously. Now, that becomes even more. It becomes even more impossible to deal with, and this is when it starts to get into a bad midah. Hamuskel shel hamida nezer al yedei tzir borer Hashem b'lev ha'adam. The muskel rishon, that initial intellectual response that is triggered by the event that's taking place, is now supported by a very clear tzir. A tzir means a picture. The imagination and the picture becomes very, very big in the person's mind. That is kept in the heart of a person, kesad olav lifal. In other words, the kasan, we're going to talk about it right now, the angry person has on file thousands of pictures of himself in these situations getting angry. He just has to, when the button is pressed, he automatically has an entire profile, a complete encyclopedia. Of pictures, an album of pictures of himself in these situations, yelling, screaming, crying, humiliating somebody, getting back at someone. But he has a very, very, very complete album in his mind and in his heart of tziurim, of what do I do when I've been so insulted? What do I do when my covet has been slighted? How do I react? Now, so besides the muskel rishon, that first response that's in the brain, that's set off, there's also an entire album of tziurim in the heart and in the mind of the person. Yaakov, Yaakov ben Rachel, what does Yaakov ben Rachel do in this situation? And I have a history with many precedents of what I do under these circumstances. L'kas and yes tziyurei kas. The angry person, the balkas, he has in his mind tziyurei kas, a long history. Tziyurei kas. That's why we spoke about this many times over the years. That's one of the saddest things in the world, how off statistics of Sean, I spoke a few weeks ago, the statistics prove, and it's not just like 51 to 49, it's very, very lopsided, that people who come from angry homes with their screaming and yelling, the likelihood is much greater that they'll end up being screamers and yellers also. Even though, as they were growing up, they swore to themselves, the last thing on earth that I ever want to have in my house is screaming and yelling. But remember, from the time that person was on earth, there are tziurim, there is a complete album, years and years and years of tziurim, of images of anger. And to change that, even though rationally there's nothing in the world he would want to do more than to change that, he doesn't want to feel that he's condemned to the misery of his parents. But to change that seems so difficult, and it seems so impossible, that the most natural thing is to just slip into what's comfortable, even though it's crazy and even though you hate yourself, but you just slip into the comfortable way of reacting and responding to things that you grew up with, which is anger. There's another conversation I had this week with an old couple, students of mine that Baruch Hashem are married. They're happy. They're doing okay. But she's a very big yeller. She's a big screamer, the wife. Oh, a delicious person, but very dramatic. You know, you ever meet, you know, everything is like a super duper Academy Award winning Indian. You know what I'm saying? Like everything is big drama. And he's a very easygoing, laid back guy. Very easygoing. And, you know, it's starting to get to him. It's starting to get to him. The way that she's dealing with the children, and then now she's expecting again, and then she's very strong with the children, and he's like the softest, kindest person. She's also very sweet and good, but she has I know her since she's 15 years old, and she comes from a house where the mother was totally out of control, and the father is very easygoing and laid back. And you just see history repeating itself. And I said to her, you remember how we used to talk about that when you were 15 years old? Do you remember the rachmanis you had on your father? That you couldn't bear to see how your father was subjected to your mother's temper. You couldn't bear it. Do you remember? You would come, you would cry to me, how you would go to sleep, you would cover your ears with a pillow, because you would hear how your mother spoke to your father with no derech eretz, and your mother would yell at you and your father, and how your father, you always such a tzaddik, your father's such a tzaddik, he never talks, he never yells back, he's always so kind. I said, you remember that you were 15, so now you're almost 30. But you see, your children are going to be saying the same thing. That daddy, Abba's a tzaddik, and mommy's a lunatic, and we feel so bad for our father. I said, is this what you wanted in life? So she says, what can I do? I can't, Rabbi, I can't. Like, I said, no, you can. You can. But a person feels that they can't. You feel that you can't. I was just talking to my sister the other day, we were talking on the phone about certain inyanim that we've inherited. I'm sure many of you share with my sister and myself, those who grew up in very European homes especially, there are certain inyanim, and among European homes, if they're Hungarian homes, there are certain inyanim. There are certain inyanim. It's not so different from other Jews, but there are certain knetchen, you know, that are different a little bit. And my sister and I were talking about it, and we laugh about it, you know, because we laugh about it, that it's... But as I spoke about the other day, you know, in a certain way, you feel trapped by certain things that I know that I would prefer not to. I would prefer to overcome. I would prefer not to be a certain way in these inyanim, and I find that it's very, very hard. And my sister and I were talking about it. You know, it's very hard, and we have tsiurim. We have tsiurim of how we have images in our minds. We have images in our minds of how. Of how to react to certain things, of how nervous to get and how to fret about certain things and other things with the children, and how, you know, it's the whole world against us. I don't know if you know the mentality what I'm talking about, but we have our family, and we'll just have to stick this out together and join forces. It's the whole world versus us syndrome. And it doesn't make sense, and it's something to overcome, but you feel in a certain way that you're trapped by it. So, okay, at least I'm married to an American, so it's, I have some help. But if like two Hungarians or two Polishes, you know, it could be very, very hard, like to could be especially hard to deal with it. Right? So, and it comes with certain very beautiful and sweet things also. It's not all negative. It's mostly very nice and very positive, but there are certain nekudas that are there. So they're all this tsiurim. So the balkas is the kasni is tsiurei kas. The balkas, the angry person, has a long history of kas, and how it could be. That's why I was saying before, even before him, from, you know, even before he was mature. His parents, he saw a lot. The Balgaiva, Tsuyurei Kovid, the Balgaiva has in his head all kinds of images of Kovid and of Gaiva. And the lazy person has all kinds of images of danger. Danger means that all kinds of images of how he failed when he tried to accomplish certain things. And he's come to the conclusion that it's absolutely not kedai to put in an effort. It's just not kedai to put in this effort, to pass this course. It could be something like that, like math. You know, you were some teacher told you when you were in second grade that, oh, you're not good at math. You're not good. Math is one of those things that people suffer from a great deal. People who are not mathematical, they suffer from terribly. Children that are not inclined to math, I know children suffer from that terribly, and it became part of their way of looking at themselves that I'm just not mathematical. And there are other people who feel the same way when it comes to other subjects. So even on the simple level of being successful in the school or whatever, there are tsiyurim of failure, and that it says that tell the person it's not kedai to try. And therefore laziness, that lazy person, when it comes to something else, will see that he has tremendous, tremendous enthusiasm. The same person who can't get up for davening, the same boy who can't drag into shul, like sometimes we feel like you have to go fishing with a rod and with a hook to try to get a kid in. That same boy, an hour or two later, he could be running up and down a basketball court for 5 hours, no problem. He can, and if you want to get him up for something else, he'll get up for if he feels that he's good at it. The reason that people that in general, there's a problem with men coming to shul on time. I don't know if the ladies know about this, if you're familiar with this inyan of men. Just if you look outside the window, if you're up at Shabbos and you look out the window like at 9:15, 9:45, and you see men just rubbing their eyes and walking very slowly over to shul, you know, it's not that they're incapable, it's not that they're lazy people necessarily, it's just that they're not particularly interested in going to shul. But those things that they feel they're successful at, they'll get to on time. They just don't feel they're successful at davening. They're not good at that. They don't feel good at it. And for many, many reasons, and over the years, the person just feels, I'm not good at davening. Either because I can't concentrate, or either because I've tried davening and God doesn't answer me. That's his view. And I'm just not good at it. So, what's the rush? You know, davening starts at 9, why should I be there at 9? Why suffer a moment more than I have to? So if I can walk in at 9:15 or 9:20 and it's okay and I'm still considered to be Orthodox and it doesn't cause any problems getting shidduch for my children, so I'll go at 9:15 or 9:20. But it's because I'm not successful at davening. But that same person will be at the meeting. He'll be at the meeting on time. If he's trying to sell something to somebody else, he'll be there. He'll be pacing up and down 5-10 minutes early, looking at his watch where the client is. He'll be there on time because he feels he's an ish matzlich. He's matzlich at this. He's matzlich. So the lazy person has all kinds of tsiyurim in his mind as far as that particular area is concerned, that it's not kedai. It's not kedai. There's no point to it. And therefore, he doesn't have the kaychas. He's not going to get up for davening. He doesn't want to get up for davening. So if you walk into yeshivas, you see kids lying around. What is it? Get up. Naps and get up and sick in bed. All kinds of machlas that we never heard of, that we don't even know. Thank God they're not really sick. But you understand, he doesn't feel like it so easy. But that same kid could be Ben Azmanim, he's up. Or he's not up, but that's what he wants to do, not be up. But he's doing what he wants to do, which is not being up. And then he could sleep to his heart's content. But he has kaychas to go on a trip, he has kaychas to play ball. Because he sees himself as a matzlich in those things. But in those things where he's not matzlich, where he already is convinced he's not matzlich, in his mind, it's already fixed and set thousands of pictures of being called on by the Rebbe and not knowing the answer. So, like, how many times do you want to get up for that same, misery? If you've been called on 1,000 times and you don't know the answer, or you don't even know the place, it's worse, right? You don't even know where you are in the Gemara. So, you lose your cheshik. You lose your cheshik. So that veg that becomes lazy. And the person that has that netiya to laziness is convinced that he can't be successful in that area. And he becomes lazy in that inyan. He becomes lazy. That's a muskul rishon, and it's accompanied by all these different tsiyurim. all these different images in the person's mind. He says, Siurim Eila Hinam Lerov Dimyonim. These images, to a large extent, Rav Volbi says, are imaginary. To a large extent, Dimyonim. Now, what does that mean? He has the album, and he has the evidence, because he has these pictures in his heart and his mind. The Mashgiach says, L'raiv dimyanim. The dimyan doesn't mean that his parents were not angry. That wasn't a dimyan. His parents were angry. The dimyan is regarding himself and how he adapts to, and how he manages with disappointments and failures in his own life. And the fact that he's become convinced that he has to get angry, that's a dimyan. And these, and not only is it a dimyan, but even the images and the paintings that he has of himself are most often very exaggerated. Very exaggerated, very, very strange, bizarre. That's why you'll find a person will say things like, I did this 100 times, especially kids. Never had a kid that said, I can't try. Many, all my friends, I can't. There's so much evidence, you feel like you can't even talk about it. All of my friends and myself, all of us know, this can't, I can't. And there's nothing to argue with. Because the person imagines that there's so much evidence, it's, you know, he has like a whole stack of things going against him, and he can't fight with it. But it's a dimyan. Mostly it's very exaggerated, filled with all kinds of dimyanis. You can't wear. That wasn't even a failure that happened 10 years ago. That wasn't the way you think it was. It's a mistake. It's a delusion. You've become comfortable, because the easiest way for you to react is being angry. So you've just accepted that. But it's a dimyan that you have to be that way. Muskel Rishon Muta, you have a mistaken first response or reaction to something. That's why the example of the angry person. Once he calms down and he comes to his senses and he's a little bit of a humble person, he'll go to the other person, he'll say, I'm sorry, you were right. Because when you get crazy, you're 95% of the time you're wrong. Sometimes you're right. But when you get crazy, you're wrong. So you will go and talk to the person and say, I'm sorry. Or you'll say the usual thing, the crazy sentence, it wasn't me. Like the mice of the Koska, that it definitely was you. And you're in charge of yourself. But the muskel rishon was a mistake. And after you calm down, same thing when it comes to the person that feels like he was slighted, and he's ready to destroy his whole family and destroy a whole simcha, whatever it might be, because somebody didn't give him a certain kavod. Afterwards, when he calms down, he's quiet, and it takes some time. With some people, it could take a long time. Then he realizes that this is so silly. I look like such a fool. I made such a fool of myself, getting so crazy about this inyan. But then he realizes that the muskel rishon, that his knee-jerk reaction, his immediate response was ridiculous. Wasn't seichel. It was irrational. It was irrational. Like I told you, and you know, before, there's a famous thing how the Rebbe of Melech, he had, his teva was, his muskel rishon was to get angry, the Rebbe of Melech. And he took upon himself that he would never say anything until he would go upstairs, and in a certain closet he would put on a certain coat. And he accepted upon himself that whenever something happened that got him angry, before he said a word about it to anyone, before he would react, he would first go upstairs to a certain room, I guess you have to make sure you're home, and to put on a certain coat, and then he would take a go back downstairs and he would tell the person. And the Rebbe Miller said that every time that would happen, by the time he would put on the coat and march downstairs, it was already, you know, it wasn't an Indian anymore. It wasn't an Indian anymore. But that happens, what happens with us is when we get upset, we start saying things, and then we dig ourselves in, and then we can't get out because we just dug in, and we don't know how to get out until, it could be like an all-night thing, or hours and hours and hours, and then afterwards, I'm sorry. But you get dug into something, you don't know how to get out. It's a muskel rishon muta v'tzira dimyoni. So you have that mistaken, irrational first response, and that's now compounded by a history of images in your brain, of distortions and imagination, and all kinds of things that you have, images and pictures of how I deal with the situation that I'm in right now. All of that together is now called Hein Hein Hamidus Hamidus Hamakulkalas Shana Maitzim Kibbein. This all adds up to create what's called the bad midas that we have. The Muskal Rishon, together with the Tziyurim, the first initial response that set off in the mind, and the Koyach of the Tziyur, of the image that's aroused in the heart, all of that together creates what's called an unattractive Mida, a Shlechtet Mida. Now, Kasher Anu Ma'amikim L'Hizbayinu B'Midasayinu. If we go deeply, and that's a big madrega, to think deeply in one's midas. And we're coming to the time of the year, this is the time of the year, where the ikkar time is to be Isaac in this inyan. And this time of the year, Tammuz, Av, and Elul is the degel. And the year is divided by the different shvatim and the different flags of the shvatim. This time of the year, Tammuz, Av, and Elul is degel Machne Ruvain. Degel Machne Ruvain. The tribes that marched in the desert under the flag of Reuven. And Reuven means to see things honestly. Re'iyah, the koyach of Re'iyah is Reuven. And that's to repair the terrible churban that happened as a result of Eini, Eini, Yardamai, my eyes not seeing things correctly, which began with the spies. The spies, Chazal tell us, Omru b'fiyah mashaloi ro'u b'neim, they said things that were not true. They said things that they didn't see. They didn't see. They reacted to something, but they didn't really see. They were reacting to something without looking into it properly. And that's caused the crying of Tisha B'Av. Eini, eini, yardamai. My eye is flowing with tears. The repair for that is during the time of this time of the year, of Tammuz, Av, and Elul. Elul, as it says in Svarim, is a lashon in the Targum, Elul Elulei, is the targum of the word when it comes to Meraglim. So the word viyasuru is Eretz Kanan. Remember it says by the Meraglim that they went viyasuru to go and spy out. Spy means to look at something very deeply. That's what it means to spy. To look at something very deeply. So it says viyasuru, the targum translates viyasuru is la'alulei. La'alulei, the Sassemis al-Tzadikim say, la'alulei is the word elul. Elul means to spy out. Elul means to look at something carefully, to look at it carefully, not to just react. The Meraglim reacted. They reacted, Amru b'fiyam mashallah ra'u b'inehem. They gave a false report. When you get crazy about something, that's a false report. When you give into a certain taiva, God forbid, it's a false report. And always afterwards you feel sick about it. Right? Let's say, going back to the example of a diet, because it's not an aveira, but it's a good seer. So, before you had that thing that you weren't supposed to eat, you weren't supposed to eat this thing, and the doctor and all the books that you have told you don't eat this thing. But there was something inside of you that said that if I don't eat this thing, I'm not going to be a happy person. I'm not going to feel. And not only that, but it builds up in your mind. You have 1,000 times that you ate that thing over the years. It could be just over the last week. 1,000 times you ate that thing. So you have in your head such a clear image of how satisfying that taste is, right? And there you go and you eat it. And while you're eating it, even while you're eating it, you loathe yourself. You feel sick about it. And when you're finished when you're finished eating it, you'll swear, I'll never, ever buy this thing again. I'll never bring it into my house ever, ever. And you're angry, how come my husband, how come my children or the company wanted to have this and now I was nichshel, like it's not even up to you. You were dragged over to this piece of cake and someone tied your head down and forced you to eat it. And it wasn't that at all. But this is how a person's mistaken reaction is that I really need this to feel good. And then the demyainis and the tzirum of feeling satisfied by indulging in that taiva. And that's what all addictions are about, we understand. All addictions, whether it's eating, whether it's alcohol, whether it's whatever that might be. Anger is also an addiction. Laziness, these are all addictions. But now in America they're called by a certain name and then the person says, well, I guess that's my addiction, I can't change. But that's we're going to learn much more about how to change these things. So of course they could be changed. It's hard. but you're addicted to that. And the addiction says that this is, that sets off a thought and an image that creates a midah, and that midah is that, that midah is that this is what I have to do in order to be satisfied. And the second that you're in that, you already see that this is not satisfying. Not only is it not satisfying, but the person feels sometimes that he wants to mamish kill himself. Wants to kill himself. If it's a thinking, feeling person, obviously if it's somebody that's brain dead, then he doesn't think about anything. But if it's a person that's thinking and feeling, so then he wants to kill himself. Even over something which is not necessarily a big affair, or if it's an affair, then for sure. I gave into that. And when he looks back over the, if it was an affair that was going on for a month, for 2 months, for years, he looks back at it. And he just, he doesn't understand how you think. How and what and how did it start and how do I, and I can't go on living this way. But then he can find himself in the same behavior. So what Ravolbi is saying is, when a person's mamik lesbani, when they're saying, when a person thinks deeply, that's a big thing to think about it. To think about it, I take my muskolas, my way of thinking, my way of thinking about things that happened to me, and I take that initial reaction and I put it under the microscope, and I actually study my way of reacting. I study it. You don't have to go to a therapist, you can do it yourself. Sometimes you have no way of doing it yourself and then you need help, but you study it. You actually study it in a rational way, not just I'm sorry, I won't do it again. You study it, you critique it. But it hurts, because you don't want to look at yourself. You just want to say, I lost myself. But you didn't lose yourself. That was exactly yourself. It's been yourself your whole life. So don't just say, I lost myself. No, that's how you've always found yourself. You would lose yourself if you didn't get angry, because that's so atypical of you. You usually get angry. So don't say you lost yourself. That's how you found yourself. Maybe you found yourself in the world that way when you were a child. If you wouldn't get angry, that would be losing that part of yourself, which you can do. But you have to study first, to think. That's all of Musa is about that. Then you'll see the mistake, your mistake. Pashit, that your way of thinking is crooked. That thought, that initial response, that you think that you have to get angry in order to defend yourself, that you have to stand up for yourself in order to get covered. You have to, you know. That's a mistake. He says, how do you know what's the right muskel? What's the right way to think? You have two things. You have seichel, a healthy way of thinking, a normal intellect, and halacha, Baruch Hashem. We have halacha. We have plenty. We have svarim. We have tzaddikim to talk to. And we have halacha. And they tell you, Mao Hamuskul Ha'amiti, what is the true rational way to respond or to react? Shall call me do mida. Haseichel Mochiach. A healthy mind itself proves Kiakas Machti Es Mataroso, that anger never accomplishes long term. Short term you could scare somebody enough and you get what you want. Short term. But Lamaisa, anger doesn't work. It doesn't work. Seichel, if you, a rational seichel will tell you that anger is counterproductive. Anger does not work. In other words, you wanted to get something your way, the last way you're going to do that is by being angry. You might get it for that second, but you're not accomplishing it. Remember that somebody's telling me, the father was yelling at the kid that you have to respect me, you have to respect me, you have to respect me. So for that hour, the kid will, you know, will be careful what to say. But as far as earning the respect of a child, the kaas, anger, undermines respect that a child has for a parent. It's the opposite. But the parent, by yelling, wants to be respected. And the yelling itself is what's least respected by the child. It undermines any respect that the child has. So what you wanted with the anger was to be respected. And that's the last thing that's going to happen. It's just the opposite. So he says, Haseichel Mochiach Yakas Machti Es Mataroso, that anger misses the target. It just, Ki Enema Eira Harachi Yaseira, You wanted that what you said should be accepted and should be respected, and so on. And by you getting angry, you lost it. The second you get angry, you lost it. It's not going to, what you said, even if you're saying something that's smart, even if you said something that's right, it's not going to be accepted. It's not going to be understood. It's not going to be understood. And there were so many times over the years that in saying over some Torah, where I said it in a strong way, and then afterwards my wife would say, you know, what you're saying is a good thing, but the way you said it, it's not going to be heard. And then of course, I immediately defend myself. Why not? Why not? Sure, that's the way it happened. But then, you know, you calm down. You said, that's not the way it's going to be heard. You just can't say it that way. You want to make a good point. It's a good point to make. But you have to make it differently. But Kass is not going to get it. It's not going to do it. Elalag, if you're an angry, temperamental person, instead of being respected and honored, which you're screaming and yelling about, mostly what you earn is lag. Lag means people mock you behind your back. And inside themselves, they look at you like you're a pathetic creature that's out of control. Lag. Va'af sinna. A lot of people hate angry people. They might show them derech eretz because they're afraid of them. You know, they're intimidating. They're intimidating people. Angry people are intimidating. So the Olam shows them a certain amount of derech eretz. Yes, yes, so-and-so. You're absolutely right, so-and-so. But when they walk away, it's just lag. They make fun and sin, and they hate the person. They hate the person. My father said to me once, many years ago, that there was a rich person, and everybody would go to him for aitzes, right? He was a rich person, so everybody went to him for aitzes. I'm sure you know the story. And then he lost all of his money. So nobody came to him anymore. So he came to the Rav, and he said, Rebbe, nobody comes to ask me for aitzes anymore. He says, I don't understand. So the rich man said, I don't understand. Mela, that they don't come to me for money anymore. I understand, I don't have any money, but Baruch Hashem, I'm still a Baal Seichel. How come they don't come to me to ask for aitzes anymore? How can a person live with such demyanis that they were actually coming to him because they wanted to hear what he has to say? They were coming to him because they wanted his money. There was a tzaddik Mishlaim just told me now. There was a certain person. There's a son of a very, very rich person from America. I don't know who it is. I don't know the name of it. I don't care. But a very, very big gevir. And the son has major problems. And he came to Yerushalayim. He moved with his new wife to Yerushalayim. And the tzaddik was telling me how all the Rosh Hashivas of Yerushalayim are trying to help this couple. You understand? All the Rosh Hashivas are trying to help this couple. So why did the tzaddik tell me this story? Because he said to me the following. He's sending somebody to me. When I get back home, he has somebody for me with big problems. And he's not the son of a gevir. But he said to me, you know who his father is? I said, who's his father? He said, his father is the Rabbi Yishol. He has a very chashuv of a father. And his father is worried day and night about him. And the tzaddik said to me, Moshe, I want you to help him. So he was telling me, you see, when the Gevir's son came to Yerushalayim, they were fighting. Who could help him? The biggest Gevir, he says, the Rabbi Yishol, he has a child that's having tzaras. That's my mazel. I don't get the Gevir's son, you know what I'm saying? But that's how it is in the world. But it's Rabbi Yishol's child, he said to me. He has a chosh of a father. He has a lot. The father's a big gevir. He can give a lot. The father's a big gevir. That's easy. He set up this whole thing to tell me, obviously to get me to try to help with this fellow from New York that needs some help. But he's a big. The father's a big gevir. It's a big gevir. And then everybody has the kaiches. Everybody has the kaiches to help and to do something. So what does it mean? It means that they don't run to the gevir necessarily because he's a bal seichel. He's a bal chochma. They want them because he's a... So that person is not loved or respected. Could be, because he can have a gevir that's also wonderful and kind and good and sweet and not tzaddik, that's gewaldic. But a lot of times the gevir are not like that. A lot of times they're not like that. A lot of times the gevir are people that this... You know, sometimes to become a gevir, not always, but a lot of times to become a gevir you have to have a certain personality, not always, but sometimes. And they're not loved or respected. Don't get shishi. Well, they'll get shishi. And they'll get certain, they'll get the names on certain things, and everybody says, oh, ooh, and the Rav, and everybody talks about him. But Bemis, that it's not usually loved and respected. Love Tavka. Hagaiva ein Emes. Gaiva, what's Gaiva? Just 2 more minutes. Gaiva, Seichel tells you, and you think, Gaiva is ridiculous. Gaiva is the silliest thing in the world. It's the silliest thing in the world. Kilei Baranu is Ma'alei Sen. Because even if there's something good about us, which we can be proud of, we didn't create our Milas. The guy from Megirak Labari, the only one who's Hashem Malach Geyus Lavesh, the only one who has reason to be proud is really Bama, so his accomplishments is the Bayarlam. He even what's good and what we have. Gaiva? What's Gaiva? The Gaiva is silly. When you think about it, it's the silliest thing in the world. I mean, you watch somebody else that's like into it, and it's not your Indian, you look at it and you say, and you feel like it's the saddest thing in the world. The guy's crazy. What are you getting crazy? That's an Irish guy. What are you getting crazy about an Irish guy? Like there are 10 people in the shul, and there are 9 people on the board, you know? And so you're on the board, but he's a board member. It's a choshev azach, you understand? This guy is crazy. It's silly. Ha'atzlus ain't a mitzius. Laziness, as I said before, 99% of the time, it's not mitzius. It's just, when you think about it, it's not rooted in reality. It's imagination. Because what he imagines is something which is dangerous. He can't possibly do, he can't possibly try, or it's going to hurt his life, or destroy his life. If he tries this, he gets that job, he tries and he applies for that. Ain't him kamas klal. Bechlal, imagination. Kasha seichel masmid birahamidus. The beginning of the avoid, and here, I guess we'll continue as Hashem next summer. The beginning is the seichel, to use the seichel to be mevara one's midus, to be a reflective person, a person that thinks, a person that studies and thinks about who he is and how he reacts. You know, I want to recommend, I don't usually do this, but I was so impressed. I mean, I don't usually do it with English books, but in this particular one, I'm so impressed with it. And I really, because it's all about this inyan, so at least to get to work on it practically. There's a wonderful book that came out a few months ago in English called Bridging the Gap. By the author is, his name is Fertig, F-E-R-T-I-G, Avi Fertig. But it's not his own Torah, it's really shiurim that he heard from a very big Bal Musa in Yerushalayim, one of the biggest Talmidim of Rav Albi. And it's an English book. It's so clear and it's so beautifully written, and it's such a healthy book. It's all on this inyan in English, Bridging the Gap. I think Feldheim put it out. I'm pretty sure it's Feldheim. I'm sure you can get it in all the stores and all the swarm stores. It's very, very kedai for some good Elul Rosh Hashanah reading. It'd be very, very kedai to get started. And there's Hashem, we should all be healthy and be able to be together in Yerushalayim. And we're going to work in the pnimius of each of the categories of midas and kaychas and nefesh to begin to unravel who we are and to become who we are, but just better editions of who we are. And the Shemesh Baruch should see that we're trying, that we care, and that we want to be good children. And that should be more the midas harachim, kerachim of albonim, that each and every one of us should be zayich for good cure and ksivach simatayim.